Welcome to the DOPA podcast, fueling conversations around creative wellness and turning negative barriers into positive tools for mental success. Brought to you by the Department of Proactiveness and your host, Alex Normanton. Joining me today is Eric Kessels, a Dutch artist, curator, communication designer, and creative partner of Kessels Kramer Amsterdam. We discuss embracing mistakes, turning them into opportunities, and how to generate ideas with unexpected results. So Eric, we're sat in your beautiful home, right in the center of Amsterdam. You really get a sense of your personality when you walk into someone's home. This really eclectic nature, abstract pieces, furniture that's really quirky, and it tells me a lot about who you are as a person. I just want to thank you for making the time in your busy schedule. Someone I've actually genuinely admired from studying your work from a student to actually working in advertising myself. There's just a lot of beautiful thoughts, absurd thoughts, crazy thoughts, things that really go against the grain of the advertising and design world, which I think gives you your really unique DNA as a person, as an agency. And so I just want to unpack a little bit further today about where that comes from. We're really here to talk about how to fully embrace those mistakes often found within the creative process and to really not beat ourselves up about those when we make them. I think by channeling those mistakes, we can ultimately unlock more distinctive, ownable, and ironic ideas. And it's a topic that obviously you're passionate about. You've written a book about it, a philosophy you wholeheartedly embody within your working process. Mm-hmm. How have you managed to maintain and nurture a creative culture where making mistakes is encouraged in the day-to-day working life of your agency?
I think it's important to say that there's different kinds of making mistakes. Of course, there's a lot of mistakes that you make in your daily life. You should do that also, and that's also something where you learn from. But often mistakes in a professional life, that is also kind of a taboo. We are kind of raised to not make mistakes in a career or in any of those things. And the book I made has mostly to do, it's called Failed It, and it has mostly to do with the fact that we nowadays are very overwhelmed almost by the perfection of the equipment, the technology, the computers, the technology we use. Our cameras on our phones are better than ever. The computers make no mistakes. All those kind of things. And this kind of a perfection in all the technology is not really a good starting point for creativity. Creativity mm-hmm. should be, a total different starting point. And in the book, I advocate a little bit that as a creative person in whatever industry you're working, you should deliberately go sometimes in the wrong direction and deliberately mm-hmm. make mistakes. This is not the normal mistakes that you make, but you have to almost inject yourself with these mistakes. You can also see it like when you are driving somewhere and your navigation system is on, and you take mm-hmm. a wrong turn off the highway. This person in the navigation system is saying like, turn around, and the voice is getting crazy. But I think when you then go on and you pass the moment where the voice is getting totally ballistic and and stops and finds maybe another way out, that is also metaphorically quite a nice place to go. How you kind of bypass this perfection.
Mm-hmm. I mean, sometimes when you take those diversions and go off the beaten track and don't do as you're told from the navigation system, you come across things that you wouldn't usually expect. So I think if you take that analogy by going off piste, let's say, or going to skiing now, you kind of get an unexpected result or an unexpected moment where, that wouldn't have happened if you hadn't gone off the traditional or straight road of process, let's say. Yeah. That's an interesting analogy.
Of course, these are more metaphors, and it sounds also easier than it is, because for instance, when you are starting in as a professional, this is actually quite difficult to do. I mean, you should also have a little bit of confidence to make these mistakes mm-hmm. and to go totally off rail. The young mm-hmm. professionals nowadays, technology and the craft they have learned that is so compressed if you compare it with 15 years ago. I mean, they're so much faster. They know everything, and they know how to make everything and how to finish everything. So I hope that also, the failing and going in a wrong direction, that is also something that they should really learn and
embrace.
You can also compare it to the front garden and the backyard of your house.
Yeah.
The front yard of your house is your portfolio. That's what you like to show. Those are the finished pieces. That's where a lot of people pass and they see this, and it's almost like, look who I am. That's the Instagram page, that's the website, the portfolio, that's the front yard of your house.
Mm-hmm.
Contrary to that, there is the backyard of your house, which is totally the opposite. I mean, there's a fence around it. You don't want people to look at that because it's embarrassing. There's a lot of unfinished projects there. Yeah, you are ashamed of your own backyard because, you know, it's a mess. And again, as a metaphor, a very nice place to work in and to make ideas and to, you know, you can walk around naked there. Nobody sees you. You can play. You can just do whatever you like.
Are you saying nakedness is part of your regular process?
Of course. I mean, you have to be naked is also, again, as a metaphorical thought, like as a creative. Yeah. And also when you come up with an idea, you should be naked always. When you find an idea, then you put your clothes on and then you show who you are. And when you have found something in the backyard, where in the process of ideas, you should basically be like 80 or 90% in that backyard. I mean, it's scary because sometimes to take the step to go to the front yard, people take that too quickly because they think, okay, I got it now, and but it's not right yet, but I'll go to the front yard and I finish it. You should wait as long as possible with that, because, you know, with a good idea and a strong disrupting or funny or monumental idea, to finish that won't take a lot of time, you know.
I was watching an episode from Dixon Baxi this week, actually, the agency in London, and they've just released a short series on their process. And they were talking about how often they'll have a meeting coming up with a client, maybe in somewhere in the world, and it's 24 or 48 hours before they present. You know, they were talking about a review they would have and just looking at each other as business partners going, the work isn't ready yet. It's not at the right level. We've not cracked it. Therefore, we're going to park the meeting, tell the client, be open and be transparent and say, look, we're not quite ready to share. Can you give us another 48, 72 hours? And we guarantee we'll blow you away when we come and present.
Mm-hmm.
And I think there's something really interesting about being honest where you're at in the process of ideation, rather than going to the front garden. You know it's not 100%. You know you need probably another hour or two with a hammer and the saw to figure it out.
Yeah.
But so often we kind of have that in our mind, but we don't present it forwards.
Yeah, I have also experienced that, for instance, many times, because there's always like a deadline, of course, but what deadline is also kind of bullshit, because when the idea is not good, what the reason is there for a deadline? You know, sometimes we call the client and say like, yeah, we're almost there, but it's not good, but we need another week.
Yeah.
You know, sometimes what they don't know is that 1 hour before the meeting, we kind of crack it to think about ideas like, it comes when it comes, but you can't force this. You know, it's a kind of creativity on command that you have to do.
Mm-hmm.
You can't really force it. When the meeting is there, the client says like, yeah, it's very good, a great idea, nice that you took 2 weeks extra, because they don't know that we just made it an hour or half an hour ago. That's also not important, but the difference in DNA between a client, an agency, or creatives and people that give you the briefing, there is a lot of confusion about that. I think agencies and creative, they should do a lot also, you know, to bring those two parties closer to each other.
Yeah.
In meetings with showing things, there's a unnecessary confusion, you know, because the two parties don't communicate with each other too well.
Yeah.
In a meeting, you know, why not spend half an hour first to chat to each other and to show something, talk about what your hobbies are, you know, just that you break the ice and that there is, you know, like that you see who you are. There's always this tension. On the other hand, why should there be a tension? Because a company has given you the job because they like what you do and they are curious what you made. But often there's an unnecessary tension there.
How do you encourage that making mistakes attitude within your agency on an everyday basis?
We started in 1996, and so that's 25 years ago this
year. Congratulations.
We were the first agency you know, founded by two creatives, at least in Holland at that time. Mm-hmm. And our idea was to work very directly with clients. So traditionally, what you saw in communication and design agencies is that the creatives were kept away often from clients, and they were like account executives that did that work. Mm-hmm. Yeah, we just said, like, we don't want ever account executives in our company. We just want to work very directly with clients so that the people that make the ideas also sit opposite the person that can decide which idea to go for.
Yeah.
Plus, we just wanted to also incorporate our hobbies into work.
Okay.
When they're good creatives, they're quite eclectic. Eh? So then they have interesting hobbies. They sometimes photograph, they direct, they draw, they have other writing skills or whatever. I think you should embrace this also, because why would you push this away and only use a very small part of their creativity?
Yeah, and I guess some of those things that you discover within your side projects and your passion projects and your hobbies actually directly influence the work in a way as well.
You mentioned, for instance, passion projects. I really hate that term, you know, because. I think that's how you also sometimes see a portfolio nowadays. You have a portfolio, and in the back of the portfolio, there's the passion projects. It makes me sick to see that, because, you know, when you are creative, it's kind of obvious that you have a passion. A passion is always. So it means that the works you haven't seen, you saw before in your portfolio, there was not a passion in there. Now we end up with the passion projects. Bullshit.
So everything should be passionate.
Of course. And everything should be mixed together.
Yeah.
A commercial job, a hobby, a thing, you know, like whatever. I mean, this makes the DNA of a creative person, and it makes the DNA of what they make. It's very old-fashioned to think like only within the borders of the work that is being produced.
Yeah, I also think, though, maybe for the people who aren't feeling the passion within their day-to-day work, which I think is not sad, but unfortunate, or locked into a role that they've been doing for quite a long time, and they've kind of...
You should really quit your job because if you have the feeling that you're in the wrong place as a creative.
Yeah.
I mean, I had it also once for about a year that I worked somewhere, and I was really, really unhappy. Just quit your job as soon as possible, because to have like frustration is the worst enemy for a creative, you know. You need to be very positive, very fit. Those are the best ingredients to be creative.
Yeah. Your 9-to-5 is like, I'm going through the motions, and my 6 till midnight is my passion project time, because I'm not getting that in my day-to-day. But actually you're saying...
Yeah, but I mean, I put it all in a washing machine and just mix it all up,
you know, exactly.
Because... Why is 11:16 in the morning not a good moment to have suddenly a strike of your passion within the culture of Castles Cramer that also attracts the people that work there and also makes the group of people that work there so interesting, because they are all individuals with very unexpected skills in that sense. Together with the skills they need anyway to make things. But, you know, I think that's also very important to keep everything open and to influence yourself in a way with your own abilities and mix it. Yeah.
I like the analogy of the washing machine.
Yeah.
Why do you think so many creative people are fearful of making mistakes?
You know, with the race of making work on computers, making... You know, it's also in the nature of the work, I think, in design and advertising, and it's a cocktail of that. You know, the technology became better, but also I think the industry is always, especially with design and advertising, always kind of going towards the most perfect picture, the most perfect solution. There's nothing wrong with that, but the way to get there should be sometimes very bumpy. I'm not against any perfectly finished end result. I think that should always be good. But for me, it's more important like the 80 or 90% of the time to get to your end result. That should be really fearful. That should be really, you should be insecure. You should really think, what am I doing? And you should almost push yourself off the cliff. Mm-hmm. That is very interesting. And that moment is the best moment you can have, because how many times do you really give yourself the time to be totally open, to not think about an end result, but think about the process and, you know, let all the influences come in and play with them and see, you know, that you can surprise yourself almost with what you made. I mean, that for me, that's one of the nicest moments, you know, like I wish I would have that every week, but, you know, it's the best moment is when you have come up with something and that you almost scared or totally surprised of your own idea, that you think like, wow, can I make this? Can I actually, have I actually done this? Or and that is a fantastic moment because then you know that you step a little level up in your own ability of things that you can do.
Yeah. So you're actually saying these negative attributes associated with the creative process and coming up with ideas, fear, self-doubt, anxiety are actually almost like the fuel to great work, and you should fully embrace those things.
Yeah, absolutely. Of course, there is tools in technology and budgets, and there's a hierarchy still in that. But for instance, in making ideas and coming up with a very good idea, there's no hierarchy in that. Everybody has the same chances. And also, everybody needs to go through the same shit, you know. Like, I am very embarrassed about myself. Often, I don't have to say it every time. And people, luckily, don't see that I'm embarrassed about it constantly. But when I have to come up with an idea, I go through the same shit over and over again. I think there's two scenarios. Either you have the idea within the first 5 minutes, you know, that you must have the same sometimes, you know, you speak to someone you do a certain job for, that person is explaining their problem, and within 5 minutes you have the solution, or you know, you don't even say it out loud, but you think like, okay, this is it. The other scenario is that you don't have your idea within 5 minutes, and then you have to actually work for it, and then the painful process starts because you have to go through this kind of packed forest full of stereotypes, you know, like that just shoot at you and think like, oh, this is a good idea, this is good, and one is even more embarrassing than the other one, and you know, it's very stereotypical. You have to all push them away until you are at the end of the forest somewhere in an empty little field where nobody has been yet, and there you find something very stupid or interesting or new. But it's a painful process. This is like, it doesn't matter how much experience you have or how long you do this, every time you have to start again. Of course, to kind of make a wrong turn in this process, that is something maybe from experience that I can do easier and quicker, but the process is the same.
Honest of you to put words to that you still struggle with those things even now. And, you know, for people looking at you and your career and your work and your agency, it would be easy to make an assumption like, this guy's got it sorted, he knows what he's doing, which you do, clearly. Often, what you don't see is actually the people who've been called to Graham Sturt's quote, veterans of the creative world. They're actually struggling with the same things that a young creative is struggling with at the beginning of their career, but maybe the techniques and tools or thought processes that go on within that veteran's mind are a lot quicker. Going, hey, I've been here before. We know it's going to be okay. Embrace the forest, wade through the trees. There will be a clearing moment, and maybe it's not the right clearing moment. Maybe there'll be another one, but don't be fearful of that.
Yeah, definitely.
I mean, you talked about the use of industry software, pursuit of perfection. If we've all become kind of perfectionists, why are we shying away from making mistakes or unable to make so many mistakes?
It's not my goal to make everyone perfectionist, or I'm just trying to prove the opposite. With all the possibilities there are, all the choices there are, this is not like a moment where creatively or with technology that there is a revolution, for instance, at the moment, like maybe 15, 20 years ago, there was a certain revolution in technology, creativity maybe. But at the moment, I think we just patch everything, and just like there is so much possibilities that we perfect them all very slightly till the last moment of perfection.
Mm-hmm.
I think when we kind of hit the roof at a certain moment, you need to break it down, you have a downfall, which is very interesting, you know, like maybe you can also compare it with, for instance, sound, you know, like at a certain moment there was, you know, music, there was the CD, for instance, years ago.
The mini disc.
The digital files, and now there's just like we get our music streamed and it's just digital and it's perfect in a way.
Yeah.
But because of that perfection, people are more and more going towards vinyl, for instance. Eh? So the vinyl is then, it's also like as an example, you know, but it's cracks again with the, but it's more authentic in that sense. The same is also for films, eh? Like for instance, we can stream films, we can look at them very quickly on demand, we can see them at home on our computer in the best possible quality. When there is a certain perfection and it's at its top, then of course
it's a rebellion.
So and things go, so it's almost like waves that go up and down, and that's also nice. I think things are too perfect, you have to break them again, and this is the it's an interesting process that's happening.
Can you highlight a project where a mistake took center stage and actually became the main idea within the project?
There are several, but often in the process of coming up with an idea, there is already something you can make a change in. So for instance, a client explains this problem, creatives or as an agency, you have to come with a certain solution. And often the solution is to avoid the problem, to solve the problem, like things like that. But a wrong way of thinking is almost to make the problem even worse, because nobody thinks like that, because everybody thinks like, yeah, come on, if you make the problem worse, then you know, they will never accept that, and because it's bizarre that you make the problem worse. In few cases, we have done that.
Mm-hmm.
There is a school in Holland, and they have like one of these big schools with 13,000 students, and we did a lot of work for them also. Often in institutions like, for instance, musea or schools or hotels, you can make a big change because they, especially in the tone of voice that they are using, because these are also stereotypical things, and it's always done in the same way. Especially also in schools, it's always a little bit patronizing towards the students, like top down. And so we did a lot of work for this school to change that. But there was a lot of garbage on the campus, and even though there were a lot of garbage bins there, so in a way a very small brief, but this was also nice that we made it even worse. On the garbage bins, we just put like text saying like putting garbage in the garbage bin, how difficult can this be? And then we made it very difficult by making a huge metal ladder of 4 meters high with the garbage bin on top of the ladders, or building a cage around the garbage bin, so that was almost impossible to throw away things in there. So to provoke the students there to kind of, and almost hold a mirror in front of them and play with them, you know.
Yeah,
and
turn it into a bit
of a game. But basically we made it more complicated to throw away the garbage in the garbage bin. And so this made a huge cultural change in the school. And apart from the fact that, you know, the day after we placed the installations of the garbage bins, it was on the national news. So it is very nice to look at it from that way.
Yeah.
And of course, not every job has that ability, and you can't do that with everything. But when there's an opportunity for that, it's quite nice to play with that.
Yeah, I mean, it reminds me of the late Alan Fletcher and just that philosophy, which is the art of looking sideways. And I think you kind of fully embrace that in your approach. But also I think it's interesting that you have, you know, a diving board within your studio, which is very much a metaphoric attitude of just jump and you don't know where you're going to land.
Yeah.
But actually that's part of the fun of the process. And maybe you land in jelly, maybe you land in custard, but maybe you land in a beautiful field. You know, it's intrinsic to the process, isn't it? But don't be afraid to dive.
But a lot of these things are also very they're just in our DNA, you know, they're very intuitional, you know. Then there are of course frustrations and there are negative things, but you need to clear them before you start working. The morning before, I had like a fight with my girlfriend, for instance, which happens sometimes. That day is not, of course, your best creative day, because you are a bit fucked up because you have you had a bad time with your girlfriend or with your wife. And luckily, there's other people who didn't have a fight with their boyfriend or girlfriend, and then they are better that day. Very simple like that, you know, like you really need to solve your frustrations and it doesn't, you know, you can't park them. You have to really
grab them head on.
Grab them and yeah.
How do you think we can reprogram our minds to reframe mistakes in a positive way?
Yeah, this has mostly to do with opportunities, you know, like, you know, as a creative, you are looking for the best idea at that moment. Many ideas have been made with a lot of people. You drive on the highway and you're in a traffic jam there, and everybody's looking for that for those things. So to divert and to go into a wrong street and to take a little side street, see if there's something there, and then end up on the same road back again. Yeah, that's where it's more about.
But failure and mistakes, I think, are interconnected, and if we can reframe them in people's terminology to be actually, it's not a mistake and it's not a failed moment, it's an opportunity to do something great.
When I talk about it in Germany, it's they have a lot of problems with that. Mm-hmm. Japan is, for instance, exactly the same thing, you know, like, you know, they take it way too literal, you know, a mistake is really like a punishment mm-hmm. it's really like totally unacceptable.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, my theory, the way I like to phrase these mistakes, that has to do with finding an idea.
Mm-hmm.
You could also call it different. Don't even have to call it a mistake, but...
No, it's a diversion.
Yeah.
Yeah. Back to your road analogy.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, a lot of your ideas and work play with subverting the norms, breaking category conventions. Where does this attitude of not playing it safe and standing out come from?
I remember this from early on when I was traveling from my town where I was born. I was traveling to art school, and I had to take the train every morning at the same time, at the same platform, with the same mm-hmm. people standing, commuting there. And I thought, like, wow, I mean, it really fucked me up at a certain moment. And from that time, I was like, it was a game for me every day to enter that station in a different way. Take a train earlier, mm-hmm. take a train later. You know, it was a game to be at the same spot every time. Design, yeah. Advertising,
mm-hmm.
it's full of stereotypes and full of the categories. They always are exactly the same. Look at car advertising, look at advertising for babies, for perfumes. It's, and also in design, you know, when you see a poster from a museum for a cultural event, they look always the same. If you see a poster for a supermarket, you know that this is a poster for a supermarket. So there are rules that you are not supposed to break.
Mm-hmm.
You know, nobody tells me that I can't break the rules in this.
Yeah. And it's an invitation to play.
Yeah, like nowadays, I also make also my own autonomous work more as an artist. You know, an artist, for instance, that is the starting point of an artist. So that's also the difference between the two disciplines, of course. Within design, advertising, you have to work within certain boundaries. As an artist, these boundaries are not there, you know, like, mm-hmm. which makes it sometimes also complicated, because when you can do everything, it's kind of complicated where to start.
Mm-hmm.
But the disruption and the friction, this is already for an artist, that's a must. That's a starting point, you know, like that's why it's called art.
Yeah.
With advertising or design, that's not always, I mean, there's not there's not a lot of clients who say, like, listen, you have to change the category. You have to, I know that's something you should do yourself, and then in the mm-hmm. end you should really also see if you can get a client on board to see that you can together change this.
We all got into the creative industry because we fell in love with the idea of play, experimentation and ideas. When do you think we started to undervalue the power of play within the creative process?
When the level of professionalism becomes too serious within someone, that is the moment you should watch out. I think, for instance, myself, I'm very much interested in amateurs, like in a very positive way. Amateurs are really, they're totally not afraid for mistakes, and they are also naive in a very positive way, to me at least. I mean, I think that a lot of professionals inject them sometimes themselves, sometimes more with amateurism, and because the danger is to become too professional. I think a professional is an amateur who never quitted, you know.
That's
to
nice.
Because too professional is then also boring, and that's also why where we were talking about before, where you that sometimes people don't have joy in their daily work anymore. Nowadays this is even more important because a lot of creative jobs have become actually very, very boring, you know, like there's a lot of online jobs that are in a way quite repetitive and not very challenging. The fact that you bring in your own ideas and bring in your own hobbies and your own passions that you where you once started with. Every creative person had also a kind of a passion and a fascination at a certain moment. It's very important to bring this back again, and you can do more than you think you can in this way. And
what practical tools can people use in their process to shift their mindset on mistakes and how to get better ideas?
That when there's a problem, make the problem even worse. When there's something physical where you think about, make it extra large or make it super small. Also, divert yourself in your way of thinking. When you always walk from A to B, just walk from A to Z once, or bringing a stupid thought within your thoughts, you know, like so that bring like a puppy dog into it, or bring like a sailing ship within the thought, or a crashed car or whatever. I'm just giving an example, but to bring this word within your thinking that has nothing to do with it, loosens yourself up and gives you, disrupts also your way of thinking and maybe diverts it into a more interesting way. It's like you should constantly keep open. Sometimes you can also help by isolating yourself, you know, like people say, like when I'm in the shower or when I'm in the toilet, I always have good ideas. Yeah, this is totally right, because You go into the shower and into the toilet just to do one thing, to shower and to go to the toilet, not for something else. So that gives you more space in your head to think about things. So you can also force yourself within this isolation, you know, lock yourself up in the bathroom and then just don't do anything there, but just think about ideas, or don't sit behind a desk and think like now an idea has to come. Just do something totally different. Take a one-day holiday and think about the ideas during your one-day holiday. You know, you can do whatever you like, but don't sit somewhere and think that it will arrive soon.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, a lot of those things are intrinsically linked to Brian Eno's oblique strategy cards. Mm-hmm. I don't know if you know those.
Yeah, yeah.
Which I've used on occasion within an ideation process where the creative team's absolutely stuck. As you say, they've been sat at the desk or around a little creative studio and they're struggling. And so you chuck in these oblique strategy cards, stand up on the table, take a walk, turn it upside down, look at it from reverse.
Yeah.
I mean, you've kind of pointed a few things there. A giant finger is also one of your strategy and one of your pieces of work, which I think is nice.
Yeah, in a way, the processes are always for everyone the same.
Before we wrap, and that's not me and you doing some R&B track, as in wrap the session.
Yeah, yeah.
The attitude that people embody within the day-to-day life of the agency. Could you give some insight into that?
Yeah, life is too short to spend it with assholes, you know, like the people you work with should be also your professional friends. You don't have to go to bed with each other. Be happy with those people around you. You love them in a professional way and maybe in an amateur way or whatever, but that's the relationship that also makes you very happy.
Well, it's your work family, isn't
yeah.
it?
Yeah, any rotten apple in there is not good. We had that like also one or two times, and then it's very good to stop with that. Because if you make a very safe surrounding within a company, you know, that is a very good starting point to think very unsafe. That should be the same in art schools, companies where you do innovation, you know, like it's good to create a safe and very welcoming and very good and, you know, where you like to go there every day, like a surrounding like that and an atmosphere like that. Within that atmosphere, they can be very weird or extravagant or very thinking in a very unsafe or a risky way.
Providing a safe space and permission to fail and permission to play.
Yeah.
I'm just thinking back to a documentary I saw about IDEO where, you know, the culture was you don't have to ask for permission to do X, Y, and Z, just do it. And if there's a problem, we'll let you know. So ask for forgiveness after what you've done. And I think that's sounds in line with kind of the culture you have built. It's about people first. It's about building family first. Creating a safe space to make mistakes and celebrate the mistakes, because actually they could be the solution.
I think there's a lot of people who have very good ideas, but then those ideas are also sometimes stuck halfway because you can't convince a client or someone you work for to do those ideas. And, you know, like communicate and talk as much as possible. Yeah, that often is forgotten and underrated also.
Yeah, we have a shared connection in terms of, you know, putting passion into all things to do with life and creativity, but also embracing the failures, embracing the mistakes, because actually they help you to be better at what you do.
Yeah.
And the ability to learn from those things helps us to reinvent ourselves as well. There's so many words of wisdom and pearls of wisdom.
Oh my God.
No, it's true. It's true. I could genuinely sit here and talk to you all day. It's really much appreciated. I know you're a busy person. I want to thank you for your honesty.
Pleasure.
And actually feel genuinely inspired as well, sitting here with you this morning. I think a lot of people are going to get some really good insights and inspiration from
all these fuck-ups. Huh?
Well, why not? Huh? Why not?
No, of course.
It should be celebrated for sure.
Yeah.
I really want to thank you for your time, Eric.
Pleasure.
And hopefully we'll see you soon.
Ciao.
This podcast was brought to you by the Department of Proactiveness and was recorded in accordance with the social distancing rules. If you are a brand interested in sponsoring future episodes of DOPA or you simply want to get in touch, please email info@thedopa.com. Don't forget to follow and subscribe.